everybody. This is Bart Baggett. How are you tonight? I see one person from Denver, but I don't have your name. And I see lots of people online from what we call the web conference, which means you can hear me, but I can't hear you. So tonight's call is about how to say negative traits in a good way. I do welcome your comments. I'll be checking on the online message board for questions. And there is some questions that have come through as far as how you phrase things, and I do appreciate that. You're doing a question all the way from Gayathri Shankar. I'm going to guess that's one of our students in India, as we have 500 or 600 there in India. There you go. I'll approve that question, and then I'll look at Jordan's question. So thank you for listening. My name is Bart Baggett. This is what we call a member teleconference or member teleclass. Every month we have a live call where I can answer your questions. I can analyze your handwriting. No one faxed in their handwriting this month, but it's always an option to analyze your handwriting and then sort of share the insights with the other students. There are people all around the world looking to become certified through our home study course a lot. There's other courses as well to be certified, and our membership really is designed to help you understand handwriting analysis and get all your questions answered, and hopefully get you to a point where you could either make a full-time living or help lots of people with your skill at handwriting analysis, often, of course, called graphology. Now, tonight's call is a member call. It'll also be available in the member area in the handwritinguniversity.com membership site. If you haven't logged in and got your password, you should definitely do that. You probably do have your password. This is a member call. I did invite some of my friends to listen to this call for free, and so if you're one of those people that I invited, thank you for joining, and I hope you do enjoy it, and I hope you come back and join the member call later. So let's get right into it. We've got about 45 to 50 minutes, and the reason we're on kind of a tight schedule today is I do know that a lot of people download these MP3s, they listen to them, and we do like to keep them in a certain time frame so you can also listen to them. Second reason is, as you know, we also teach a forensic school, and we use the same bridge number for the forensic class within an hour. So I actually have to keep this seminar as short and as direct as possible, as we're also using the bridge line. Now, I would recommend that you look around the page or look at the email we invited, and there's a PDF file that you could have printed out. There is also a slideshow along with that. So if you're listening purely on the internet, you should be able to view and witness the slideshow as it moves along with the presentation. If you're simply listening by telephone, I'll describe it, and of course the PDF file would be useful to download later. Really, the PDF file is a fill-in-the-blank with one short diagram, and then of course, as we move along, some examples of the handwriting traits. I'm going to take a presupposition that people listening actually have some basic knowledge of handwriting analysis. And I say handwriting analysis, particularly the methodology that I teach, which is basically there's a number of different traits. We've got 70 or 80 in the basic traits and another 70 or 80 in the advanced traits. We call it level 101 and level 201. And those basic traits mean that fundamentally it's a primary trait because there's a particular formation of ink on paper correlates to a particular personality trait, and that's what we call a primary trait. If you had an advanced trait or a stack trait, it would be when you combine two or three different traits to have a third. So if someone had a temper only when pushed around, or they're aggressive only when being criticized, that would be a combination of traits. So tonight's class really is about the primary traits, but how you phrase these primary traits in a way not to be offensive, and in a way that can get agreement, and really you can help somebody. Because one of the challenges you may have run into when you first begin to analyze handwriting is that you see really negative things in the writing, and you might not want to admit it. You might not want to say it. You might not want to hurt their feelings, especially if you're in a social situation. I mean, there's no real benefit to just offending everybody as soon as you sit down with a handwriting. So it just doesn't help at all. So that's the purpose of tonight's call. I know this very well because when I first started to analyze handwriting, I was 14 years old, and I found it amusing to be shocking. I found it sometimes fun to be sarcastic. And I also found that it was even more fun to have somebody lean over and say, oh my gosh, how did you know that? You know, how do I change? And so I have been both on the side of being sarcastic and not very kind to the side of being incredibly empathetic and compassionate. And I think as a teacher now, I prefer to teach with the empathy and compassion, and that's what this class is about, to attempt to get you to understand not only different phrases, because it's not about memorizing a word or a phrase. It's about the ability to fully understand the source of this person's personality trait, the person's history, the person's fear, a person's aberration. And then if you understand that, then articulate it in a way that says, I understand you, I'm not judging you, and this is how it might play out in your life. And so we've got about 10 to 12 different traits we're going to come over. We'll also go back to the questions for you guys that have called in. Feel free to interact. I see Jack called in, and there's a couple of you on the phone. Feel free to interact and, you know, raise your hand or stop me, because I love the interaction. And then I've got slides to go through there. So let me first take a look at the slides and make sure that you guys are seeing what I'm seeing. It looks like you should see, if you're looking on the line, there's a blue slide that says welcome to tonight's teleclass, and then the next slide, as it'll come along, talks about if you've been analyzing handwriting for a while, you can avoid that awkward feeling. And so that's the next slide you should be looking at. And tonight we're going to go over shyness, domineering, dual personality, fear of intimacy, sense of criticism, a trait called vanity. You get the fear of opposite sex or the anger at opposite sex, the lying trait, and, of course, anything else that comes to mind about how to do it. I got a question earlier today, and it was from a woman who said, well, how do you tell an obnoxious jerk he's an obnoxious jerk without actually offending him? And hopefully we will get to that trait as well. So before I get running with the slides, any questions from the people who are on the telephone, or let me read the webcast here. Okay, you guys are being shy tonight, making me really work for my supper here. Okay. Here's one from Jordan in Winnipeg. Thank you so much. She says, how would you phrase fear of success? It seems as though no one truly understands what I mean when I analyze it from someone's handwriting. Good question. Now, just for those of you that may be new, fear of success is a primary trait, and it looks like a frowny face. You know, the happy face and the frowny face? If in the letter Y, it is a frown, meaning it doesn't come to the baseline. So make sure that when you're spotting fear of success, it is below the baseline, because if the trait goes above the baseline and comes back down, they don't actually have that trait. It could be something called dejection. So that's the first thing. You just make sure that you're calling it correctly. Secondly, I would say that there is a percentage of people that would disagree with that, because success is one of those things, especially in a Western culture, that everyone strives for. So if you tell them that they have an opposition to that, it's sort of like saying that you don't breathe air. Everybody thinks they want success, and most people don't have a verbal opposition to being successful. But what you do find is the trait is true, which means that they tend to fail to cross finish lines. They tend to get close to a particular target, and then crisis happens. So the way you would rephrase that is, you know, it seems like when you get close to achieving a particularly important goal, crisis happen or disasters happen, and for some reason, you don't reach that goal. Have you noticed that as you get close to certain targets, you come up short? And so one of the key ways that I'm going to teach tonight, and you might hear me, especially listening to the CDs, is you'll phrase difficult statements as a question. So phrase difficult statements as a question, and then you ask them. Now, if you're judging this, you're saying, well, Bart, you're asking instead of telling. I clearly know what the trait is, but people respond a lot better if you phrase something as a question. You know, don't you recognize this? Or has it ever happened? Blah, blah, blah. If someone is just on the sideline judging us, they may say, Bart, you're mind reading and you're not really being specific. But this class is for, experienced professionals looking for ways to phrase things in a way that gets higher agreement. Now, why would you want higher agreement? You want higher agreement because you're trying to help them, you're trying to hire them, you're trying to, you know, be their friend, you're trying to friend them, and you're also trying to perhaps convince them this is a valid art or valid science. So there's no reward for being brutally honest if indeed it offends them. There's also no punishment for being incredibly diplomatic and turning things into question, unless, of course, you are on some kind of study where they're trying to judge Henry analysis. So, Jordan, great question. The fear of success, of course, if it's prevalent, I normally find that people do recognize it. They do ask, why do I do that? Why do I self-sabotage? Why do I, you know, blow up? Why do these things happen to me? And you can begin to explain the dynamics of, you know, most people are attracted toward pleasure. Some are motivated away from pain. And the fear of success has sort of a dual connection. Either the idea of success is painful for you, so you avoid it, or the idea of failure has pleasure to it, much like a little girl getting an ice cream cone if she comes in second or third place. If your family rewards you as a child for failing, then you may have more love and affection from failing than succeeding. And that would be some of the dynamic of why that happened. Now, let me use that fear of success as a great example in our first slide here. And I'm going to push the button with our new slide presentation software to get to the very next slide. Now, I'm looking at slide 3 and give it about 20 seconds to catch up with you. And it tells you how to locate a past event or root cause. Now, those of you that aren't therapists, I want to encourage you that this is a profound concept. Those of you that are a therapist, you may never thought about how handwriting analysis or graphotherapy can really predict some people's root cause and some of the biggest issues in life, and of course, heal it. Now, with graphotherapy, you've taught to heal it. But the great thing about handwriting is, especially these negative traits, is almost every negative trait can be reframed as something positive. And normally, that something positive has to do with safety, security, or survival. And so here's a word I want you to write right on your notes is people want to survive. So how do I survive? How do I survive better? That is the question a lot of people ask as they grow up, and therefore they develop traits which can be positive and which can be negative. Almost every one of the negative traits that we'll talk about tonight, and perhaps every negative trait for many, even the most psychotic people, at some level, their brain thought, if I adapt this personality trait, if I adapt this behavior, my propensity to survive will increase. And, you know, we watch one of my favorite shows, our family is Criminal Minds. We watch CSI, and some of the very darkest profiles of people and criminals are on there. And you think, how in the world does kidnapping or doing the things that they do help them survive? But in their own very warped mind, they feel that that is a path to get them some sort of emotional fulfillment. And indeed, survival might be one of those. So you should be looking there. Does everyone see that graph right there in front of them that says a birth event, another event now? Got to help me out, guys. I don't feel like I'm talking to myself. I know you're there. I can see you on the phone call. Thank you so much. Who am I speaking with?
This is Allie. It's probably shown up as Jack, but it's Allie.
Hi, Allie. Thank you so much for participating. There are other people on the phone, too, but
I'm here, Bart.
It's so much easier to talk to people and humans than just do a monologue. So thank you. So are you being able to see the graph? Are you online as well?
Yes.
Wonderful. This is the first time I've used the PowerPoint function, so I'm glad it's working for you.
And sorry, is this the same as the PDF?
It is a little different. The PDF is really just a couple of pages of notes that you can write on.
Okay.
And so the PowerPoint presentation actually has a lot more slides than the PDF. But
okay.
On the very top of the PDF, that if you download in the last 20 minutes, there is a little chart, a little timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll be able to see that exact same chart. Great. So does anyone know of the two girls that are chatting with interacting among the dozens that are kind of stealthing in the background? Does the idea of a timeline ring a bell for either one of you?
I heard you talk about it.
What is a timeline? Let's just take Allison. What do you think that is and whether or not I talked about it or somebody else?
Well, the way I understand it is that, of course, wherever you are now has been affected by different events in your life through your childhood and, you know, just different things that have happened have shaped the person you are now. And so sometimes to figure out why someone has a particular trait, why they act a certain way, you need to go back and see what happened to them.
Perfect. And most especially psychotherapy going back into the 40s and 50s, they would, even in early hypnosis, they would say, recall an event. And they would just have an event. So it's sort of like the brain. Now, the brain is not linear. The brain is kind of like scattered. And so you just recalled an event. Well, if you could put a line sequentially throughout somebody's memories, that line, especially if it was a straight line, would simply be a metaphorical line. But the birth would be the beginning, and then you come up through all your past to now. And you could actually create a line into the future, which although is not real, it's imagined. In fact, I could argue that your timeline of your past isn't real. It's only imagined based on what you perceived. That becomes a line. And in NLP, neurolinguistic programming, they have discovered that not everyone has a line. Some people have a spiral, some people have a curve, it's an S. So there's no right and wrong about how you store memories. The reason I use the straight line here is just for simplicity's sake. But one of the cool things that you can do to help fully understand a personality trait is simply make the presumption that the reason they have this trait, and let's say it's a trait that serves them not well at all, like fear of success, which is, I think, what was submitted from Jordan. You know, they have a fear of success. And so, Ali, I'm going to stick with you for a second. If now they had a fear of success, you know they were born. Can we agree on that?
I can agree on that.
Okay. And then what had to happen between the time they were born and now that they developed this fear of success?
Well, it could be any number of things. Something that comes to mind, I guess, is maybe, you know, if you somehow a crisis happens and you don't succeed in some, you know, long-term goal that you're going towards, you often will get a lot of attention and sympathy from people that if you actually had succeeded, maybe you wouldn't have had as many friends or you wouldn't have been as supported or had as much attention. But there's any number of times, you know, that could happen. But that's an example that I thought of.
Perfect. And here's the magic of what I did and what I want you to do. Regardless of your answer, by simply asking that question to yourself, you will have at least one, maybe two or three possible answers. Now, when you're analyzing somebody's writing, you may not know what those answers are, but you did it real well. You said, well, Bart, that's a great question. What could have happened to make this person fear success? Well, a number of things come to mind. That pontification is, in essence, a really amazing way to couch a negative trait because you're not discussing the negative trait. Let's say it's a horrible trait, like they're violent. Like someone is just incredibly violent. Like they just react with screaming, horrible, Jerry Springer-type spite, right?
Yeah.
That's not fun. I mean, but if you have the same question, and I'll go back to you, Allie. You know, what had to happen between now and when you're born that your body feels compelled to react with such defensiveness that you almost have to, you know, protect yourself physically? I mean, what could have happened?
You could have an abusive father or, you know, being the smallest among a bunch of kids and maybe picked on all your life. And so the only way you could survive is to fight back. And that's just become your default for a defense mechanism.
That's brilliant. And notice the two things. By asking that question, I've unfortunately removed the responsibility from them. But at the same time, if you're not blaming somebody, you're not going to get defensiveness.
Right.
So if I say, well, what happened to you that you feel compelled to react this way? Most people wouldn't think that's an accusation. If I said, well, you know, I was driving down the road and, you know, I had a car accident. And you said, well, wow, you know, what happened to you? You know, somebody ran into you. Yes, somebody ran into me. Is anyone going to blame you for that accident? No, because you're framing it as if it happened to you. But if you said, well, you know, I'm a terrible driver and I ran over 16 people yesterday, that I'm at cause of that. And so part of the phraseology of being a good therapist is to help them access the understanding without actually placing blame on their current state of affairs and letting them live in the past as if, wow, I was a little boy. Of course reacted that way. Well, of course I would get violent if I was picked on in eighth grade. You know, no one's going to, especially now, because we're judging a past behavior. And so that makes most people's defense mechanisms reduce considerably. And almost every negative trait, you could actually take the same approach. Who just called in from Alabama? How about from Colorado? See, Allie, you're so brave, you and I.
I'm here, Bart. It's Amy. I'm in Colorado.
Hi. What's your first name?
Amy.
Oh, hi, Amy. One of my favorites. So here's a question, Amy. Somebody is terribly shy. Terribly shy. And what trait would recoil with shyness? Can you think of one or two?
Low self-esteem?
Perhaps. There's actually two that would be specifically a primary trait. You're correct, though. Low T-bars might make someone not approach somebody because they have a fear of themselves. But there's one specific one I'm thinking of called self-consciousness. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah.
So self-consciousness would reveal by what handwriting trait, do you recall?
That's your M humps that go upward.
Right, M humps that go upward. Sometimes the L's could go upwards. And then perhaps even the FA writer. With a small middle zone, the FA writer, that would also be shy, correct?
Right.
And if a big middle zone writer, probably not, but we rarely see an FA writer with a big middle zone. And if these terms don't ring a bell for you, just refer back to the 101 and the basic kit, and you'll understand what those are. So, Amy, if person is here and now and they have shyness, and we know they were born one day, the two facts that we can agree on, what might have happened in between here and then? What event could have happened that would make them sort of have this reaction called shyness?
Maybe they had put themselves out in a position where, you know, maybe a talent show or something, and everybody ended up laughing at them and making them feel, you know, like they had just made a fool of themselves.
Got it. And so instead of, by the way, it's a great example, which you could always tell the client an example, or you could say, you know, a lot of people that have shyness had some event in the past where, you know, they reached out, they were vulnerable, and they got laughed at, they got mocked, and they weren't approved. You know, did something like that happen in your past where, you know, you felt that you were not going to be accepted, therefore the safest way to, you know, protect your ego was to withdraw? And that's how you could couch that framework to say, you know, you felt it was safer to not even risk being noticed. And so those are two words, if you're taking notes, that you might want to make note of, is risk being noticed, you know, risk rejection, and you got tired of being rejected, so you decided not to try. It was easier not to make an effort. Now, again, if you can frame it in the past, this is an event that happened, then you'll rarely get a defensive argument at the moment. If you say, hey, you're a jerk, you're condescending to women, and you're rude all the time, well, you're going to get a fight, or the people around them are going to agree or disagree. Either way, it doesn't serve you well. Now, you can say it in a way that is present tense, but then reflect on why it happened. And so one of the verbal tricks I do, instead of talking about the actual trait, I talk about how it came about first, and then once I get agreement on how it came about, then I say, well, then here's the challenge in this trait. And let's move on to domineering, which is one of those. So we did, let me just recap this. So the picture of the guy with the shy picture, there are a number of events that probably happened to make him shy. Now, those events could be one event, two event, three events. I mean, I think most people would agree that they've had a terrible dream of showing up to elementary school in their pajamas. Well, that's probably just a dream. Most people's dreams don't become a significant event that forces them to have some kind of fear or phobia. But you don't have to dig for the event as a handwriting analyst. But as a therapist, if you see these traits, it gives you a clue that there is an event. And the reason I bring up the timeline, and now move on just to the phrasing, is that for most successful therapies, and I say successful therapies, I think NLP, some of the timeline and hypnosis research I've seen in the last 20 years has been profound. Even the Dianetics that has had a high success rate. That is all based in going back and clearing past events through a sense of timeline. And I think even modern psychotherapy does that. A psychiatry, of course, does that, but they don't necessarily want to, you know, to solve the problem. They're more druggists. So we're talking about people that are actually trying to find a therapeutic intervention, you know, cognitive psychology. They don't always go in the past, but it can be useful. So even though it's very laborious therapeutic process, going in the past and sort of reframing things and taking the energy out of those things, it's a very common practice. And so if you see handwriting with all these traits that could be perceived negative, you know there's lots of, shall we say, rough spots in their past. Because it's, I always use this metaphor, it's like driving up in a car. I could drive up in a brand new car, or I could drive up in a brand new car that has got dents on three sides, you know, in a flat tire. You guys could make a huge assumption of what happened if I had a car with dents on three sides and two flat tires. Something really traumatic must have happened to me or my car before I got there. And that's what you're looking for in handwriting. You're trying to find what that traumatic event would be. The next trait is called domineering. Now, let's just start with what we already know. Amy, I'm going to stick with you. How would you describe a domineering person?
They have a temper. They're sarcastic. They whine and complain.
Okay. I think those were all probably words that we would choose to do that. And what I'd like to get my students into a habit of is sort of telling a story. So while sarcastic and temper are also different primary traits, domineering in itself is a primary trait. So it's sort of like defining a word in the dictionary with the same word in the dictionary. It would be great if we could not use other primary traits to describe a third trait unless it was completely apropos. In this case, domineering does include sarcasm. So that would probably be an accurate assessment. What else does domineering include? It includes the sarcasm, which is the points, right, Amy?
Right.
And then it includes what other trait?
Temper.
No, dominant. So dominant is, you know, the downward T-bar, and then the point would be the sarcasm.
Yeah.
Temper is actually... might or might not be in there, because if the T-bar is actually predominantly on the left, then the temper may or may not ever show up. So we can't make the assumption because they're domineering that they've got a temper. Now, that's like a pretty ugly trait, doesn't it? I mean, does anybody want to be bossed around and tied up and beaten or anything? Not normally, on a good day.
You have to pay extra for that.
Yes. I knew there was comments, you know, in the background wondering. I just didn't know if he was going to articulate it. So domineering isn't normally a pleasant trait. However, contrary to popular belief, dominant without the sarcasm, pretty common among managers, pretty common among some CEOs. They like to be in charge. And if they're in charge of a business, big or small, and they get to be in charge, and if they're dominant, that doesn't make them rude. That just means that that's what gets them the feeling of importance. So, Amy, I'll stick with you. What had to happen with someone that was dominant? What event might have happened for them to think this is how to survive?
Thinking.
You just have to mock up a scenario in your head. And you don't have to be accurate about it. In fact, when you're talking to somebody, you could even reframe it as a question. Hey, Bart, I see that your handwriting has domineering. This usually means that you need to have control. And so I'm just wondering... that's a phrase. You guys can write this down. I'm just wondering, dot, dot, dot. Can I ask you a question, dot, dot, dot? These are fantastic softeners or language introductions where you can put up a question that they'll tend to agree to. Would you mind if I ask you a question? Well, I'm just wondering, what happened in your past that made you feel that you being in charge was really the safest place for you to be? I mean, are you a born leader or did something specific happen? So, Amy, you think I could say that to a dominant person and they wouldn't get upset with me?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, most people think that when they're domineering, they're actually leaders. I mean, some of them hold the belief, which probably would be a different conversation, is if people have a certain trait, they probably have different belief systems. It's not a perfect correlation. But most dominant people probably have a belief that they're the most competent person in the room and other people are idiots. And if you saw a pointed M and N, you know, the very needlepoint comprehensive M's and N's, those people are very bright, they're very analytical, they're very fast-thinking. And the metaphor that gets the biggest laugh is, wow, you really are impatient with stupid people. And you find a lot of them around you, don't you? And they just laugh because people that have fast thinking patterns get annoyed with slow talkers. Does everyone agree they've witnessed this? So if you combine domineering with sharp point, then you really understand, like, wow, you know, not only are you really bright, you get impatient, other people are just stupid, so they'll get out of the way and let you row the boat. Boom. And that makes sense to them. Again, you can go in the past and say, what happened? Because obviously at some point in their childhood, they said, you know what, if I don't take over, this family's going to, you know, crash. So maybe the younger sister took over. There's a lot of reasons, and we don't have to speculate. But remember, in order to survive, they decided this was the way to be. Moving on to the next slide. The art of the verbal analysis, how to say bad traits in a kind way. This is called dual personality. Now, split personality, dual personality is an uncommon trait. It has been noticed and actually, I wouldn't say clinically proved, but there are people that have different slants in their writing and they show different physiological symptoms. Sometimes they need insulin, they're diabetic, sometimes they're not. So some people change eye colors with their particular slant. So it is not uncommon to have people with really dual personality. I wouldn't say it's very common. If you do find people with profoundly different slants in the same writing, it definitely has the tendency to almost have like an alter ego. And has anyone ever met anyone like this that's willing to talk on the phone here, since we only have two powerfully strong women on the phone sharing their experiences?
Hey, Bart, I have. This is Ian.
Hey, thanks, Ian. Tell me about it.
Well, actually, she was a girl. She grew up in the Philippines until she was about 20, and then she moved to the United States and started. She got married and studied IT. So it was like really very different lifestyle, you know what I mean?
And did that lifestyle require her to have different reactions to certain things?
I'm assuming so. You know, I didn't really get into it because it was kind of newer as I was studying, so it was more of a novelty for me. But that's kind of what I was assuming, that, you know, I mean, it's a very different life when you're swinging in vines, because she told me that, you know. She was like, yeah, I used to swing on vines in the jungle, and then when I got married, I came to the States, and it was just totally different, you know.
That is pretty funny.
I know, right?
Interesting. Well, I mean, I can see why maybe perhaps if you really came from a hunter-gatherer community into the, you know, the suburb, it would make you do that. But there's something called a valance, which is sort of like a personality shell that we get from our mother or our father. There's just different terminology for this in all kinds of different studies. But essentially, it is a whole persona that we slip into that we think will get us what we want. And I say we, it's not really an I. But the most common is introverted, extroverted. You know, leftward slant, they don't trust anybody, they're withdrawn, they're shy, to a rightward slant where they're emotional, expressive, they're impulsive, etc. And so that is definitely something you'll notice that way. What I would normally say as far as this class goes is, got those two personalities, who say, you know, it's really interesting because people find you really unpredictable. Quote, people find you really unpredictable. This unpredictable nature can be confusing to most people, but for you, it just makes sense that some parts of your day and some people can see one part of your personality, and other people, it's safe to show another part of your personality. perhaps a wilder part of your personality. But not everybody can handle the full you. So it's important to, you know, keep those people separate, and you may not show certain sides of certain people. And so you just kind of make it like, oh, they're very complicated. Not that you're a head case and you should probably, you know, pick one personality and go with it. But essentially that's what happened is most people, and maybe this is a theory that's incorrect, I do know that especially parents that have had twins or have kids close together, you know, they'll tell you that some kids are extroverted the moment they come out of the womb, and some are introverted the moment they come out. So there is definitely a nature versus nurture argument there. But I think most therapists would agree that the general moderately healthy person has a social extroverted quality, meaning that they're happy, they're well-adjusted, they can interact with people. They are, at some level, a social being, opposed to antisocial being, which would be like, you know, violent basically, you know, anti-establishment, you know, plotting around, building bombs. So social versus antisocial. And so you see the backwards handwriting as a symbol of antisocial behavior, or at least emotionally withdrawn, which is normally a result of trauma. And that trauma, of course, could be the worst case scenario is they were, you know, violent or, you know, molested. They had some kind of, you know, major attack on their person. That would make anybody withdraw. Or it was psychological, which means that they perceived the attack was imminent and they withdrew. A lot of kids in abusive relationships or abusive, like, households, they'll have that FA slant, the tiny slant, to develop these mechanisms for safety because, you know, especially if you've seen, I would say there's probably been a number of movies about women or men that had been abused or even raped, they sort of just check out. Like, they can't leave physically, but in their brain, they just check out. They're like, I can just leave my body for a while. And I think that's when you get that F.A., a backward slant. And so for those of you that never dealt with an F.A. writer, you almost always will have them agree that there's some huge event or a repeatedly traumatic event that would make them feel like they needed to check out. And that it checking out would be that a sort of emotional withdrawal. Now, you can't say that it was always sexual, although I have heard some handwriting experts say if it's an FA slant, they always had a sexual trauma. I don't think that's a fair statement, although the numbers would suggest that probably might be an accurate statement because of the prevalence of that particular trauma for kids. But it is definitely a trauma of some kind. Okay, let me click the question here. Let's open up the question. Let me see if there's anything on the webcast here for questions. And back to you if you have any questions here.
Sorry, can I ask a question about, I should know this, but how far apart do those slants have to be to say that it's a dual personality? Does it have to be like FA to E+, or can it be BC to E+? What is this?
I would say it definitely would have to be more than one slant next to each other. So, you know, if you had CD and DE, I would say that would not qualify at all.
Right. Yeah.
But if it was at least one category or two, and it was fairly consistent, I think in a lot of, especially really sloppy handwriting, you could probably find the stray AB slant, the stray E+ slant, depending on how you measure it. But if you're very consistently getting, you know, 40% in the AB category and 40% in the DE, that's definitely an issue.
Can I ask you a question about my handwriting?
Yeah, of course.
Because it's kind of like that. My handwriting, I noticed that I consistently have my upper zones letters be, like L's and H's, be about BC, sometimes CD in there, but my middle zone letters are almost always DE, E+, and so there's kind of a variety, but it seems to be consistently in the different zones. Would that somehow mean that I'm more logical in, like, philosophical, religion areas and more emotional when it comes to people, or am I just a head case?
You know, I don't think you're a head case. I think the fact that it's consistent within these zones would probably delay the dual personality argument.
Okay.
It would probably go back to the process that you're using to measure.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give an example. You know, as you know, we have this school that we're teaching now, which is graphology and personality and criminal profiling. We also have a school where we teach forensic doc examination, which I go to court. And one of the challenges is, literally, I've never seen a published methodology in the field of forensic science that says, here's how we're going to consistently measure the slant of handwriting. So even though that the forensic side is purportedly the scientific side, right? They go to court, it's accepted like DNA and fingerprint, they can't agree on how to measure a slant. Now, even the slope, which we like a baseline, you could use, if you had a printed baseline, you might use that. So the structure of even how you measure slant is complicated. And I just bring that up to let you know that you may be measuring it using your own system that's really right on the money. You may not be off. Like, you may just say, well, my upper zones are DE, my middle zones are this. Maybe you're somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And then your interpretation was actually very astute. Wow, since the middle zones have to do with social aptitude, maybe that particular slant isn't where I'm going. I would actually probably want to sit over your shoulder and just make sure you're getting those three dots in the right place.
Yeah, I've had a lot of practice doing that, so I think I've got that part down.
Good, good, because it's funny. Until we get to the seminar, I had people literally, I would say like 20% of the people that took our final exams were off by one entire slant measurement from the home study people. So it's not that and we've even rewritten the 101 book based on that, trying to be as specific as possible to say, put the three dots, you've got to measure this, but even still, until you kind of get somebody with you. So I hope you're doing it right. I don't think you're crazy at all. You don't sound crazy.
Oh, good.
But we will wait till we see the handwriting to confirm that.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Let me, I know we have about 10 minutes left, so let me at least say thank you to our Indian guy who submitted this question. I'm not going to answer because here's the question. I'd like to know what are the ideal candidates and qualities for a receptionist. Great question, wrong teleclass. So that's a great question to ask for the monthly teleclass. I'm going to save it and I'll ask it because a receptionist, of course, would have certain qualities. And off the top of my head, I would say eye for detail would be one. And normally, based on the receptionist I've met, which would be big fluffy writing, would be a large middle zone. But that all would depend on the company you're dealing with. And a large middle zone, I have been accused in my immature days of referring to that as bimbo handwriting, which would be the opposite of tonight's phone call, which is how to say things diplomatically, right? And they tend to get offended by that, I've noticed. Funny, odd. So I would then reframe that to say, you know, social aptitude is important, being good with people, you love to talk to people and engage with people socially, and because of that, that's your strength. The downside is getting too focused on what's present may not be the ideal scenario for long-term thinking. Okay, moving on to the next slide. I'm going to go a little bit faster because I want to get through these slides. Exclusiveness is a fear of trust. And so that's a real easy one. I'm going to say, let's reframe that and say, you know, you have a particular need to be intimate with only one or two people. So I would, you know, it doesn't surprise me if you're monogamous, but I have to think that the cause of that is a little bit of distrust with everybody. So maybe you trust one or two people that are close to you and that have proven their integrity, but the rest of the world, I think that you keep at arm's distance and you don't trust. Slide number 8, it'll be coming in a minute. It's called Fear of Intimacy. Now, those of you that have been studying with me for 10 years or looked at other books, that probably might say antisocial in a different book. I don't use the word antisocial anymore because I think it has a more exact meaning of a very nefarious and negative connotation to the word antisocial, whereas fear of intimacy is not antisocial. It is not social, so it's the opposite of social, but it means they have a lack of intimacy and they were emotionally burned. This is the one trait I can look and say, did you have a divorce recently? You know, what happened recently? Did you break up? Like, for some reason, you just, man, you don't want to let people intimately. And this doesn't mean they won't have intercourse or sex, because many people would, but they just wouldn't have intimacy. So use the word intimacy, not sex, because the sexuality and the sexuality, but the sexual drive would be the length of the why, not the actual space. Okay? So that was that. I want to reference, make sure we get all of our kind of our traits covered in tonight's phone call. And thank you guys for interacting so far. It's so much fun that way. Okay, the next slide. Oh, good. It's a commercial for our conference. Anyone here already have their tickets for their conference? Amy, are you coming?
Yeah, I do, and I'm bringing my mom.
All right. Now, you went last year, right?
Yes, I did.
What was your favorite part of the 2009 conference?
I loved being able to watch the videos of the people after we had done our analysis and see how close we came in our analysis to how they really were, at least in the video.
Nice. And did you feel that you were a better analyst afterwards, or did you feel like rejected because you missed everything?
Oh, I felt awesome because I had nailed probably at least 75% of it.
Awesome, awesome. Well, that's one of the formats that we are going to do again. Now, we may actually have some real human beings in the room, but we actually did these very in-depth interviews. Some of those interviews we've been releasing slowly on the newsletters every month, but we actually have a whole bunch of new interviews which you haven't seen before. We're going to even get some couples, and at the same time, we're going to have the roundtable. And one of the things I like about it, as we have a number of guest speakers, is we're letting you analyze it with, you know, mentors and with other students, but I'm not telling you if you're right or wrong. The people that wrote the sentence are revealing themselves. And so it's just like what we're talking about. You don't get a feeling that you're right or wrong or my theory's right and her theory's wrong. You just find out what's true. And so I think that's been the strength of the new format of the seminar. So I'm glad you're coming, Amy. Those of you that haven't bought your ticket, you can still buy your ticket. And I think if you get your room reservation, I think they're only $69 a night, which is a nice block of rooms at the Clarion. It's not the nicest hotel in Vegas, but the one thing about that particular hotel, it's close to the Strip, which means you can go out at night, but the room itself is isolated, and we won't have any, like, Greek weddings or, you know, polka music next to us. So we'll have a quiet run of the whole hotel. It's handwritingconference.com. You can still get tickets. You can you can bring a friend. You can bring a spouse. And I think there are some specials, so give us a call if you want to attend. Tickets go up every $50 every month or so, so the sooner you get your ticket, the better. So that's my 30-second commercial for the Handwriting Conference. We currently have 27 people enrolled, and we're going to cap out at 100. So please tell your friends and come on. And once we start really marketing it in the summer, it will get full for sure. The next slide, did it turn for you guys? Double loops on the top of the O. And this is called intentional deceit. Now, I know all of you have met a liar and didn't know what to say. So is there an easy technique for calling someone a liar?
You tend to stretch the truth?
Oof, that's still insulting.
Well, yeah.
Here's how I would say it. You know, I don't know how to say this. I'm just going to, and I would say this quote. I don't know how to say this diplomatically. I'm just going to come out and say it. You have a fear of being totally honest with people. And because of this fear of retribution, you're going to tell a little white lie once in a while. End of quote. And I invariably get, oh, my God, you're so right. I mean, people admit to it. They know they lie. They know they make things up. It's totally within their realm of right and wrong. But I say, you have a fear of consequences. You have a fear that other people should not be told the truth because they're going to react poorly. And that's what lying is. Now, big fat liar, you call them that. That's offensive. Let's go to issues with the opposite sex. This is a trait that you also won't find in other textbooks. It's called a stinger, and it's also called issues with the opposite gender. It's a small hook in the A or C. If you guys have been studying with me for a while, and if you've worked with anyone that's been dating or you've been single, this is probably one of your most valuable traits. And it has to do with unresolved issues of the opposite gender. And it's tricky because if they're in a relationship now, they will deny that they have it. They'll say, well, I used to be that way. I used to have resentment, but I'm in a great relationship now, and we don't have that problem. Because all these attraction hormones are the same thing that turn into anger hormones later when they don't get their way. But it is the same trait. And so I say, I'm noticing you have a unique attraction to certain members of the opposite gender, and that attraction is not always healthy. Sometimes you pick people that are hard to get. Some people are kind of, like the bad boys or the bad girls. And this attraction can sometimes turn into a little bit of unresolved resentment, and that can't always create for a healthy relationship. And sometimes I think you start fights just for the fun of it to see who's stronger. So that's the phrase. Sometimes you start fights just to see who's stronger. Now, of course, obviously, if they're not argumentative, that's not going to be as true if they are argumentative. But it's a really useful phrase to do. Let's move on. Resentment and anger. This is probably one of the most negative traits you're going to come across. This is the one trait that is common among serial killers. I would say very common among convicted felons if we were to do an in-depth study of felons. Somebody did a research 20 years ago on prisoners, and they got something called the felon's claw, which is really unfortunately named because it's not a felon's claw, which there's no diagram here. but unfortunately it was some form of resentment and anger, and you will see it a lot for people that are not in jail. So I don't use that word. In fact, I don't teach it. So just be wary, because sometimes the phrases they use to identify traits can be a little misleading. The resentment and anger has to do with the past, and you can always say, look, all I can say is you have something, some profound event in the past that you've not gotten over. And because of that, you're angry, and you still have unresolved issues with anger, and you blame people today for what happened years ago. So I'd say it. You are still holding resentment for something that happened in the past. And depending on where that resentment starts, like if the left or right or top or bottom, then that would be, you know, age 8, age 1, you know, 0. If it's just barely in the lower zone, it's, you know, last year. But if it goes all the way back to the, you know, bottom part of the lower left-hand part of the page, you know, you could be resentful from the day you were born, you know. Maybe even farther back if you believe in that. All right. Down to the wire here, we've got a couple more traits. Sensitive criticism. This one, of course, is the big loop in the D. The way I say this is, listen, your positive trait is probably your most negative trait. But what do you mean by that? It means that the trait I'm about to tell you means you're incredibly sensitive when people think about you. That makes you compassionate, makes you a people pleaser, makes you want to get approval from people. But the downside is, if you suspect that you're not going to get approval, you can become suspect, you can become questioning, you can become defensive. So the same need for approval and need for love can be the same sort of reaction if you don't get it. So it's like having an open wound on your arm. Any criticism is salt, and any compliment is like sugar. And most people agree to that, and they see it as a very positive thing. Pride. This is probably my favorite negative trait of the last couple of years. I've just found people in my life that have vanity have no place in my inner circle. It's very difficult to deal with. It is not only annoying, but they tend to have a high level of self-deceit, which may or may not show up in the D or the O, but it's a condescending attitude. It's sort of like, I'm better than you, people should treat me with royalty, people should treat me better, blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of annoying. How would I say that friendly? I would say, you know, you have a unique perception of your self-worth. And because of that, I think that you find a lot of people don't stack up to your criteria. They don't stack up. And so, you know, there's a slight feeling that, you know, you're a little bit better than other people, and then they need to, you know, kind of step up their game and treat you better. That's usually what I would say. And then, of course, you know, if you've got enough rapport to be honest with them, you can say, but I must say that trait comes a little bit of self-delusion. And so you're constantly feeling that they're not respecting you as much as you deserve. And that feeling has a little bit to do with your insecurity, because your true self-image doesn't match up to your perception of how they should treat you. And I usually use my hands and kind of say true self-image and kind of have a low part. And I say your perception of how they want to treat you is sort of way up here, so that they see that there's a distance between their self-perception and their self-esteem. Because most people with vanity don't have a good self-esteem. They tend to have a false ego, and that is pride. They may have a big ego, but the self-esteem has some issues. Does everyone agree to that?
Yes.
Cool. Okay, last 5 minutes. Any questions that I can get from the audience? Let me double check, see if there's any questions that came in on the webcast. Thank you, those, for joining me that are listening from overseas and elsewhere. And thank you to those that are probably listening to this on the recording at the download site. There it is, Q&A. Refresh. Okay. Linda wrote in. She said she was an FA writer when she grew up. It was not sexual abuse or any physical abuse at all, but emotional. So thank you for sharing that, Linda. So whether or not it was physical or not, there is a perception of abuse or criticism, and that would make anyone withdraw. Again, it doesn't have to be physical. It could be very mental, because people will say that's very painful. Great. Great. Sam in Reno says, while discussing the interpretation is good, can you also give the suggested phrase we can use? I think I read that a little late, Sam. hope we gave the interpretation and the suggested phrase, because obviously the overall arc of it is sort of like the first graph I showed you. The suggested phrase literally is, there's an event that happened in your past, and you're going to basically make up, you know, something happened. Because this happened in the past, you need to protect yourself. And because of that, you develop this. You know, because of this event, you develop that. And you don't have to tell them the event. They can either tell you or they will just agree with you that that's relevant. Okay. And finally, most of you on this phone call already have the home study course, but I want to remind you that if you go to the discount page at myhandwriting.com, discounts. You can see the monthly discounts. We have discounts every month on certain products. This month, I believe you can get the home study course, and you can divide it out into 6 payments. And if you want to come to the seminar, I bet you my staff, Marianne, would probably let you pay out the seminar ticket over a few months as well. It would be wonderful to have you there. You could lock down your price into the March 2010 price, which does go up. So please visit us at handwritingconference.com. And, of course, I really appreciate you that are being members. I know it's only $17 a month to be a member. That is appreciated, and we do our best to put great content, give you access to not only MP3 files of previous recordings as well as calls like that. So it's very much appreciated. If there's anything we can do to improve our services, improve our calls, if you want us to analyze your handwriting in the next call, please contact our office. We are available in North America at 1-800-398-2278, and it is coming across right up at the top of the hour. And so I'm going to say goodnight, everybody, and thank you for being here. Thank you very much, especially Allie and Amy and those that participated in the phone call. Appreciate it. And thank you to Jordan and Ian and the people who submitted questions from around the world.
Thank you, Bart.
Okay, everybody, have a great night, and again, thank you for attending. Bye now.
Bye.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye.